and welcome to MotoPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 536. I'm one of your hosts, Skyler Vicroy, and joining me for today for the third week in a row, another new host, another American. I know you Brits are loving it. But joining me is Derek Cabrera. Derek, how's it going, man?
Hey, Skyler. Good. It's good to be on the show. We've been talking for a little while, and finally glad to be here.
Yeah, no, this was part of our... We get all these emails, people come in, different backgrounds, and I was trying to grab a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and sprinkle different stuff onto the show and see how everyone works. So why don't you give us your background on how you fit into the show?
Yeah, for sure. So just a little bit of my background. I got into bikes when I was 18. My dad was riding for a while, and I decided, I want to ride bikes too. So, just got into riding bikes in general, and my dad would watch some races here and there, and I kind of got into it. Saw some races on the TV, and in 2012 we ended up kind of going to Indianapolis on a whim to watch the GP race there. And as soon as I laid eyes on the track, I was hooked, absolutely hooked on all things road racing and motorcycle racing. So, that's kind of how it spiraled out of control. Now, I do bikes for a living, and with working on bikes and doing apparel stuff as well. So, that's kind of what I'm doing. Follow Moto America pretty closely the past couple of years, seeing the American side, kind of come up and really watch Rain Rainey take the reins there. I'm here to help cover that a little bit further. And
awesome. Well, I think we're getting quite a bit of the areas of motorcycling covered. We got Harry, on the commentary side. I've got my former mechanic. We've got the former racer and Jim. We've got you coming from, another fan perspective, but you're also in the business of sales and apparel for motorcycles. I think we're just getting a nice spread of everyone. So it's great. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, it's been a tradition, but I think we've been slagging on it lately, but we've got to start the show off proper. So let's go ahead and do that. All right. It's been a while since we opened up a beer on the show, but get a few sips of this going. I had some leftover Canadian beer from a race I went to last week at the IndyCar race. And I got to tell you, Molson is, it's okay. I don't know if that's great, but we'll make it work. So, all right. Well, coming on the show, this is going to be a mega show, everybody. There's going to be multiple hosts. Harry and Andrew are going to join us later on. They're going to talk the World Superbikes. They're going to talk two rounds of British Superbike, the triple header from Silverstone, and the latest race from Alton Park. We're going to get a MCE Fantasy League update from Andrew, I'm sure. And we also have a few interviews at the end of the show, or whenever Harry decides to throw them in, from our great Southern Scott Bolton, who was at the last race at Barber. And I think he got a few riders like Cameron Beaubier and a few other stars. But stay tuned for those as well. So if you like long shows that take up your commute or your travels, this is going to be one for you. All right, so... we're going to go ahead, the subscribers, I think Harry's probably going to take care of that. He's usually the guy that gets a hold of that, so we're going to jump over that part and go directly into the news, as we didn't get any listener feedback this week. So I'm sure most of you have heard by now, but Mr. Valentino Rossi, who broke his fibia and tibia, just, 20 days ago, Derek, something like that?
Yeah, I think it's 22 days ago at this point.
Yeah. He had a few, test days at Misano this week and decided, you know what? I'm going to go ride a motorcycle or MotoGP bike this week at Aragon. How is this even possible, honestly?
I have no idea. I mean, to see him come back, even on a road bike around Misano, that's it's pretty insane to think about. You have screws in your leg. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, he gets out of the car at Aragon, and he's got a cane, and he's got that, compression sock that's on. I'm thinking, okay, so he's going to try to ride the bike. He's got to make it past first practice on Friday. If not, Michael Vandermark is still on standby, which, by the way, short timeout for Michael Vandermark. How bad are they playing with his emotions right now?
I know. That must be a roller coaster, thinking, okay, I got this MotoGP ride, and then all of a sudden... Rossi's back, and you can't say anything about Rossi. There's those pictures of Vandermark on Rossi's bike when he's a kid. So, obviously he looks up to him to a degree, But yeah, you know, I was excited to see Vandermark on that bike. You know, there's a part of me that kind of hopes he still gets that ride, but you know, we'll wait and see this weekend.
Yeah, I think at this point, if he doesn't get to ride, I'm almost positive he'll be at Valencia at the end of the year and he'll get a quick test on the bike as a way of saying thank you.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I mean, yeah, they, you know, Yamaha knows how to treat their riders right. I mean, look at Lowe's with last year on the Tech 3, you know, kind of as a thank you to Suzuka. So to see Vandermark coming over from that, it would be nice to see him get on a MotoGP bike for sure.
Absolutely. So the Aria Aventia Racing has announced a two-year agreement with Xavier Simeon. This is something I think was most people were waiting for the announcement. It was pretty much in stone. It's going to see the 28-year-old Belgian rider step up to MotoGP and the team with the Ducati. And this pretty much completes the 2018 rider lineup. So silly season has officially come to an end in the GP rate.
Yeah, you know, it's this is definitely a surprising signing. To see, you know, it's been a terribly kept secret, but, you know, money talks, I guess.
Money always talks. So speaking of money talks, the Pons HB40 team, which is probably one of the better funded teams in Moto2, they're going to welcome Hector Barbera back down from MotoGP and also add Lorenzo Baldessari to the team as their new official riders. And I think with that experience of Barbera, who I think the last time he was in the middle class finished second to, was it Simoncelli, I believe, in 2008, maybe?
I believe so.
I'm trying to do my best Harry impression there. you know, he's going to bring a ton of experience to that team. He's been racing in GP for about 8 years now. So I'm sure he's going to come down with some fire in his belly. And Baldessari is definitely a guy that's coming up in stock. He's shown and proven year after year, and he's just starting to be a front runner this year. So especially on the Pons HP40 team, I think both of them are going to shine. They're going to be extremely strong for 2018.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good team to watch. You know, we haven't seen the Pons bike up front in a couple of years. You know, we had him up front for a long time with Rabat and Pol Espargaró. So, you know, moving on, you know, from that Moto2 team to another Moto2 team, we had the Sky VR46 Racing team announce their 2018 rider lineup as well, with Pecco Bagnaia staying on and Luca Marini, as no surprise, going over to that team as well. With that, you know, your half brother having a Moto2 team, you'd expect to get that ride. And then we'll also see Nicolo Bulega as well as Dennis Foggia stay in Moto3, which I think it's interesting. Bulega staying in Moto3 with his size, it was you know, kind of expected for him to move up to Moto2.
Yeah, I talked to I can't remember which host it was now. I think it might have been Andrew, actually. I was thinking about maybe why he ended up staying there, is because I had a theory that his downhill, his step backs in the race, and especially in the series this year, might have been that Fanati left the team. And Fanati came all this experience setting the bikes up, and Bulega was getting a lot of setup help or just directly getting his setups, and that's what caused a lot of rift with Fanati. And that now that experience was out of the team, they were two really young guys and weren't very experienced in setting the bike up. And I've worked with a really young rider, and I can tell you, you know, he'll come back in and be like, oh, how'd the bike feel? I don't know. I just need to go faster. Well, what do you need us to do? I don't know, dude. I just don't feel fast right now. It's like, all right, do we need maybe, you know, take some suspension out, put some suspension in the front, slow it down, speed it up? I don't know, man. I just got to go faster. So it takes time to get that. And I think since Moto3 bikes can have so many more adjustments than Moto2, they really want him. They know he's got talent. They know he can go fast. But they really want him to focus on getting the setup dialed in and then, you know, move him up to Moto2.
Yeah, definitely. You know, just to piggyback on that a little further, I think it's a perfect storm of, you know, the bike not being quite as competitive as the Honda, maybe Fanati leaving the team. You know, we know he has talent. He was the Sev champion a couple of years ago. So, yeah, we'll see what he can do next year. Hopefully we can see those bikes up there too. Unfortunately, on a sadder note, Colin Edwards Sr., the father of Pro AMA World Superbike and MotoGP racer Colin Edwards, has passed away in Texas on the evening of September 17th.
Yeah, he'd been battling some sickness for a long time, but, you know, the guy was tough as nails, and that's, you know, that's why Colin is the way he is. But I think Colin said something about, you know, his dad said, if anyone sheds a tear for me, punch him in the face or something like that. So hard man up until the end.
Definitely, definitely.
All right, so we're going to come down into the World Superbike news. Now, there had been a rumor going on, and I think it was a pretty silly rumor, but definitely one that got some clicks and some headlines, that there may have been a swap coming next year where Johnny Ray was going to jump on the Suzuki and Iannone was going to jump onto the Kawasaki. And everybody was going to be happy because Ray gets to go to GP on a factory team. Iannone gets to get the best bike in the paddock and World Superbike, get back to his winning ways. And everybody wins, right? Well, no, that was just some rumor that probably somebody made up to get some clicks, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, I actually didn't hear about this rumor until I saw the stories saying that it was kind of put to bed. I think Ray for a long time has definitely let it known that he's happy in World Superbike and would only go to GP on a really competitive machine, you know, probably those top three factories, but you know, it's pretty doubtful that's going to happen anytime soon. You know, he's definitely been vocal about Iannone on that Suzuki. So, you know, to kind of hear those rumors, it's not too surprising, but yeah, definitely sounds like Johnny's happy where he is.
Yeah, he's living in Fat City right now, right? He's got the best bike, the best team. The rules are actually going to go into his favor next year. He's, you know, on the verge of becoming three championships in a row, and I can't see anybody stopping him except himself next year. But the guy is getting better and better. I mean, you don't see him crash anymore. I don't even think he has to ride at 100%. I really don't, because he used to override and crash, and now he just looks, yeah, it's a Sunday jog for him.
Yeah, definitely. He looks effortless on that bike at the moment. In other World Superbike news, with the announcement that Loris Baz's seat has been taken at Aventia Ducati, looks like he's headed back to the World Superbike paddock after 3 years in GP. He's looking on getting a semi-competitive bike. We know those Kawasaki's and Ducati's are, you know, really the two top bikes with the two top teams with the most amount of money going into the squad. But looks like Baz is in pretty serious talks with Tenkate. So we'll see. You know, I hope he gets that ride on that Honda. I think that's, you know, we've seen what he can do in World Superbike, and you know, he's only 24, so he's definitely got a long career ahead of him.
Yeah, the last time he was in World Superbike, he wasn't a slouch. I mean, he was out there giving Tom Sykes all he could give, you know, and he was getting better and better. So to see him, you know, come back, and he says he's learned so much and how much better a rider is, I'm really excited for him to come back. Not necessarily on that Honda, but I'm excited to see him come back to World Superbike.
Yeah, you know, I think if Honda can get some support from HRC, which is, you know, still yet to be seen, or even, you know, change up the electronics to what they're running. I know Brattle's made a big stink about that this season. I think we can see that Honda competitive, but, you know, we'll see. It's, you know, a more factory bike than anything else that's available at the moment. So I can understand why Baz is going for that seat.
Yeah, we're short contract. Speaking of contracts, Indonesia is looking to join the MotoGP circus, and originally slated for a 2020 debut on the Indonesian tracks, but Herman Tilke, who's designing a new track in Indonesia, which is called the Palembang track, he says he'll think it'll be ready by 2019. MotoGP is more than happy to throw them on the calendar at that point. And originally it was supposed to be at, I think, the Sintel track, which was supposed to be upgraded, which I think was the last place that held a MotoGP round in 97. But a good move for MotoGP to be out there. But I think if Indonesia comes on the calendar in 2019, and Thailand's already there this year, and then Finland's supposed to be on the calendar in 2019 as well, then they've already, with Thailand coming on and Finland coming on, they were going to hit the 20 races max that they've signed, the whatever the riders union or whatever they have is allowing them to do. So someone's gonna go, one of the tracks has to go, and that's gonna be a tough call. I'm not even sure which track do you think, I wouldn't say you want to see go, because that's just kind of rude, you know, but what track do you think might be in the most danger of getting booted off the current list that to make room for Indonesia?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, right now we're seeing four rounds in Spain, but, you know, the Spanish audience is obviously the largest for motorcycle racing.
Yeah, they pack them out.
You know, yeah. So, you know, it's hard to see one of those races going, especially with each one being so unique and really loved, you know, not only by the fans, but for a lot of the paddock, it seems like as well. You know, I know they recently signed a contract with Argentina. I don't know. I don't know how long that contract's for, but you know, if I had to choose, you know, it seems like a long way to go, but you know, it's another market for MotoGP to get to, but Indonesia seems to really be the largest growing market for motorcycles and motorcycle racing. So, you know, I don't think they're going to pass that up if that opportunity comes.
No. And, to back on Argentina, I don't think it's going anywhere soon, because I know they want to expand into South America, because it's, you know, hugely untapped market right now for them. I mean, I think, you know, they wanted to, there was talks that maybe even getting down to Brazil at some point to get another race in there. But, you know, so many races, and like you said, you know, sure, Spain has four rounds, but they pack out those rounds. So, you know, which track's going to go? I think maybe the track that's at most risk now in Spain would be Barcelona, just because of the, you know, of the, you know, untimely death there of
Luis Salam.
And then they made the modifications to the track, but then the riders didn't like it. They don't like the asphalt. F1 goes there and it's going to tear up all the asphalt. So I would say out of all of the races in Spain, they may be at the most risk, but it's Barcelona. It's a big city. They pack them up. I don't know.
For sure. Yeah, I think that's a fair point, but yeah, I think it's going to be hard to see any of the Spanish rounds go. I'd be surprised if it did, but you know, I'm glad I'm not the person making that call.
Right. So if anyone out there has any opinions on the matter, go ahead and email us at motopod@motopodcast.com, label it track to go, and tell us your reason why you think a certain track might get pulled off, or one that you want to see go, or maybe a track that you want to see get added to the schedule in light of something else. So write us in with that. Moving on into the Moto America news, the 2018 provisional calendar has been announced. There's going to be 10 rounds for next year, but there's going to be a bit of a change, because the current way Moto America was, they always had the test at COTA, and then the first round was always a joint race with MotoGP and Moto America being there. That's going to change up. They're going to change the early season test. They're going to move it to Barber, and then they're going to do the first race at Road Atlanta, and then the second race will be at COTA when they join MotoGP. They're going to still ride with World Superbike at Mazda Laguna Seca, and then they're going to finish up the season at Barber Motorsports Park. So I think for the most part, the only difference is they're taking a month off after the fourth round, and then they're going to do kind of like the Western swing. They're going to come to Sonoma, then go to Utah, or Laguna, Utah, Sonoma, so on and so forth. But I'm glad that they're keeping the number up, and they're just making a slight change to the schedule so that when they do start off the season, they get their full race weekend instead of just having one race apiece in the MotoGP season.
Yeah, for sure. I think that makes a lot of sense by Moto America. You know, it's nice to see it still at 10 rounds. They're expanding it. You know, they're thinking of the break. You know, I know there was a super long break this year, so, you know, I don't think the riders like that very much, but, yeah, to see it starting a little bit earlier too, extending the season a little bit. You know, we're going to go over the last round, you know, in just a little bit, and it's only September. So, you know, definitely good to see where it is. And, yeah, hopefully good things in 2018.
Yeah, and in 2018, I think they're making a few changes to the class structure, aren't they?
Yeah, we're looking at some actually pretty big changes, but changes that, you know, I think Wayne Rainey made pretty apparent at the start of Moto America. So we're going to have three new classes. We're going to have a dedicated stock 1000 class, a twins class, and the previously announced Junior Cup, which is going to take the place of the KTM RC Cup that they've been running for the past 4 years that Moto America has been around. So in 2018, again, we're going to see the demise of Superstock 1000 and Superstock 600 being integrated into, you know, basically a race within the race. You know, Wayne Rainey has stated that, you know, it's partly because it's confusing for the fans, which to a degree it is, but I think, you know, really he wants it to be lined up with the rules and with the class structures that we're seeing in World Superbike. So, yeah, it's exciting to see those changes on the horizon for sure.
Yeah, I think they're definitely moving in the correct you know, direction with this. They're going to try to tune down the, well, not necessarily tune down, but change the rules in Superbike. So everyone who's currently there is basically going to stay on the same machines. Bit of modifications there, but it's going to be one class, Superbike. Stock 1000 is going to be very stock. It's going to be, hey, you get some wheels, you get to change the intake clip-ons, you get the exhaust. All right, that's it. And that's supposed to be a feeder series. And I think there's a rule on that, that if you go there and you win the championship, you're automatically out. If you place a certain amount of points over a certain amount of years, you can't race it. It really will be like a junior series. I don't think it'll have an age cap, but it will definitely have a results cap. So that's good for that. I think, you know, making the 600 class another feeder series where it's like, okay, sure, it's super sport, but we're not trying to have, you know, $250,000 bikes in here. Let's bring that down. So they're going to, you know, take up some of the rules from, you know, the high-end guys, like, okay, we're going to apply some rules, but we're also going to take some things away. I don't know if it's electronics or if it's motor modifications, what have you. Change that. So pretty much everybody that was riding super, you know, Super Sport and Super Sport 600 stock, they can, you know, mesh that together. And then, you know, once again, the stock 600 class will be a very bare-bones class, which will be a results-driven class. You get so many wins, you got to move up. And then the final thing with class, you know, the guy who wrote in a couple of weeks ago is asking what were they doing in Moto America. I guess he wrote in a few weeks too early, but the 300 class is going to be, I think, probably the best thing for them going on, because they're like I was telling either Jim or Annie or Harry, whoever I was talking about it, that there are so many club racers that race lightweight bikes at 250s, 300s, that just basically got eliminated because not a lot of KTMs are raced. They're a race-dedicated bike. There's not a lot of Sharums. There's not a lot of KTMs here in the States. But there's a ton of Hondas, ton of Kawasaki's, and a bunch of Yamahas now out there. If you're going to get all these people in, it's affordable racing. That's going to be great for the series.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, even in the track days I'm seeing up here in the Northeast, you know, it's a lot of the R3s, you know, a lot of CBR 300s. And again, you don't see too many of those dedicated KTM 390s. So that's going to be nice. It's going to be affordable. You know, I hope to see it as the stock 300 classes in World Superbike right now, where it's, you know, really a dash from start to finish. So we'll see what 2018 holds.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason that they want to do that class, because when World Superbike does get here, you know, they don't bring their small class, but they, you know, these are young guys that if they, you know, you could probably take the top three or four out of the championship and send them over to Europe, and they would hang with the guys over there, and then that would be a good way to get those guys a bridge over to Europe and racing a World Superbike circuit, just because they're on matched machinery and people can see that they're doing what they can do. So the talent level, you know, the talent will rise without the bikes having to get to a ridiculous level.
Exactly. And I think that's been the whole point of Moto America is again, to grow the young talent, to have a bridge over to Europe. So, you know, if we can see that in the next couple of years, obviously it's going to take some time. You know, we just finished the fourth year of Moto America. So it's a pretty young series, and hopefully that, again, that talent pool is going to keep growing and we see some more guys in the Superbike and Grand Prix paddock in the future.
Yep. And the other bonus of creating that class, it doesn't alienate the current guys who are running the KTMs, because those bikes fit right in the same class. So they're just basically going to add a bunch of other people. So yeah, they're not, you know, technically on match machinery, but they're going to balance them out. And so I think that's just pretty much a win for everyone.
I think that's going to be interesting too, because right now we don't see anyone in World Superstock 300 run the KTM because of the restrictions on it. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if the KTM is one of the bikes that are run over here in the States. But yeah, only time will tell.
That's right. So without further ado, though, we're going to slide down into the Moto America race recaps. I know we didn't get a chance to talk to New Jersey, but there was some significant stuff that happened at New Jersey. For sure that we had Tony Elias took the championship while he was at New Jersey. Cameron Bobier was out with a shoulder injury. However, Elias was coming into the weekend with a huge points lead as it was, and he really just kind of needed to finish in the top five for the two races, I think, to take the championship.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Tony's been on fire for, you know, really the entire season. So, you know, going into New Jersey with that huge point gap, you know, I think Cam did the sensible thing. He realized he didn't really have a shot at it. He's been having some shoulder issues for a while, and this obviously was a huge issue for it. So he was just going to take the time, take the season and make sure he's ready to go for 2018. But yeah, to see Tony raise the title, yeah, it was a great weekend.
Yeah, and it's great for him, and it's great to see the Suzuki's back with a competitive bike. I mean, you can see that with Roger, too, getting his wins this year. And it's just no longer the Yamaha show. We want competition, right? We need more than just one bike going out there and winning for 5 years straight. We did that with Mladen for 7 years. We did that with Hayes for another four, five, six. And then Cameron was coming on the same bike and getting it for another couple. So we need that mix. And I think now, next year, you've got this, not only do you have two competitive motorcycles, but a little bit of a feud and possibly a new rider joining on that Yamaha. But we'll get to that after Barber.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, again, we can then hop into the round 10, the final round of Moto America at Barber.
So going into that Saturday, we had a track, we had Super Sport. Super Sport still had a bit to play for. Garrett Gerloff hadn't quite wrapped up the championship. It's been basically down three guys this year: Garrett Gerloff, JD Beach, and Valentin De Bees. Those have been the guys. But in reality, though, after about three rounds, it's been the two teammates, JD and Garrett. And then Garrett went on a tear this summer. He came into race one. Seven races in a row was his winning streak. When you can do things like that, it's going to be hard to beat that guy to the championship. Seven wins is impressive. And because JD is no slouch. I mean, this guy was the Super Sport champion 2 years ago, and Garrett was the champion last year. So this year, it was, everyone had match point. This is for everything this year. So I think they introduced, the new Dunlop tire, something with the new 180. I'm not sure if it was the profile or the size of the tire, but once...
Yeah, they went from a 200 spec tire, 200 width tire, down to the 180, which is more typical to see on those 600s, coming off the showroom. And once Dunlop introduced that, Garrett just came to grips with that and really he got to ride the bike the way he wanted to, really carrying that corner speed as opposed to JD doing a little bit more of the point and squirt, getting the bike upright and taking advantage of that larger tire on the 200. That 180, Garrett just clicked with it and we've seen him go on that tear similar to what JD did last year at the end of the season. But he made his teammate work for it for sure.
Right. So we start the race off, the usual suspects jump out front. You've got Garrett, JD, Valentin, and Benny Solese. Well, then we come into one of the corners, and then Garrett blows it. Not just kind of blows it, but he ends up, I think they call that Charlotte's Web. I think that's what that corner's called. And he runs off all the way, pretty much. He goes through the sand trap, onto the run grass, onto the external runway next to the fences. Gets back on the track. I think he ends up in about 17th position because everyone just zipped on by. So you're thinking, at least we get to watch Garrett cut through the field. And at this point, JD's out front, starts to pull it down. And it's like, now pretty much the camera's on Garrett. Can he run down the guys? Can he get it? Because he's been setting fast lap after fast lap this weekend in practice. He starts cutting through the guys. And the first, five or six guys, he gets through pretty relatively easy. But, as you move up, it gets harder and harder to get through these guys. And he starts winding down. But you're thinking, JD, Benny, Valentin, they're way out there. I don't know how he's going to catch him. And then those guys start running a little bit of traffic. And then you're seeing, the gap is 10 seconds to Valentin. And then it's to Benny. And then it's, 8 seconds, 7 seconds. And then it's a big old chunk out of one of those laps, 4 seconds it was down to. And then he ends up catching Benny and passes him up. Ends up almost catching Valentin. I think when they crossed the line, he was only about 2 seconds behind.
He wasn't far behind at all.
No. I mean, it just shows the different level that Garrett's been on, especially the second half of this year. He has been a man with a mission. And he did all that looking relatively calm and made some pretty impressive passes.
Yeah, he made some really impressive passes, some more aggressive than others, through the field. As a fan, it's definitely nice to see Garrett really, be aggressive and kind of carve his way through the field as opposed to just running out the front as he's done really for the majority of the year. So, I think what was really motivating him is to actually be able to stand on the podium while he gets to raise the title as well. So once he saw Benny, that was it. He was going for it.
Right. I did love, just to go the mentality that he's had this year as he comes out of the final corner, after he blew it, he comes around and sees his team for the first time after he fell way back, and he gives a little hand off the bar, like, don't worry, guys, I got it. Sorry, my fault. And it's like, when you can relax that much in a race, and, you know, the championship was sort of on the line, he gets there, it's, you know, when you're that relaxed and you're that fast, you're almost unstoppable.
For sure, yeah, it's an impressive thing.
Off the top of my head, of course, we had JD Beach taking first, ahead of Valentina Bees in second. Then we had our guy Garrett Gerloff coming up in third. He was followed home by Benny Solis in fourth. And then in fifth, I think it was, let's see, Brain, can you work well enough? Might have been one of the superstar guys, like a Jason Aguilar or Nick McFadden. One of them kind of brought up the fifth
place. Yeah, there. Yeah, I believe it was Aguilar, you know, really, really going for the stock 600 win.
Perfect. So bring it up there. So yeah, we'll start with the top five because obviously I don't want to sit here and try to guess the whole time. But anyways, we'll move on into Saturday's Superbike race. So coming to this race, like we said, Tony had already, you know, wrapped the championship. So this was kind of just not necessarily a fun race, but winner take all, just because, you know, everyone's out there for the win. No one's out there for the championship. And I think at this point, with Cam being out, Roger pretty much cemented second place in the championship as well. So Roger's out there. He's going to go, you know, give it his all, you know, final races for the weekend. And then you had Heron, who was filling in for Cameron on the Monster Yamaha bike. And, you know, we get out there, and we know that Tony hasn't been the best at qualifying this year. I'm not quite sure what it's been with him and the bike and getting set up, but we know his starts are fantastic because Tony weighs about as much as three wet pillows. But he can get out there, and so he sits in fourth right behind his teammate Roger Hayden, and we launch at the light, and Hayden gets a great start, and then you would think the guys in second and third be right there with him. Nope, it's Tony, right past his sides, right to the back of his teammate. After that, we see Heron comes around, starts catching up. Heron's actually got a really nice line as they climb the hill. He's actually spinning up and sliding it out, and he's getting a ton of speed coming out of that corner and chasing Tony down into the, I think it was the Charlotte's Web corner. But then shortly after, we start getting a good guy going. We get a red flag.
Yeah, Josh Hayes, you know, goes down. I believe it was in turn one, and bike catches fire, and you know, they need to get that cleaned up. So red flag comes out, and then we get a race restart.
Yeah, and we also had it when that went down. Josh had crashed and his bike set on fire, but also Sylvain Berrier had crashed there as well, and he needed medical attention. So they kind of both needed to get you know, those bikes off the track and everything else. And Josh has had a tough year. This is the second time he has set a bike on fire, believe it or not. So a bit of an expensive year for Josh Hayes' side of the garage.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, you know, Josh's year in general has definitely been tough. And then to come to the last round and, you know, have to watch your bike on fire and then kind of watch that that first race unfold, you know, definitely a lot to take in.
Right, so then we have the restart, and it's pretty much exactly the same as the first one. The same guys get away almost exactly the same way. Then we get a few laps in, and then Aussie Dave, he crashes, has a low end slide in turn one, but his bike goes to the fence, goes to the gravel, rips apart, and he sets even a bigger blaze than Josh's bike. Josh's bike looked like a little starter fire. This guy was trying to melt down the track.
For sure. I think it was a one-up day with flames. That was the same day we saw Sykes' bike go up in flames as well. So it was just a lot of fire that Saturday. But yeah, you know, it's tough to see for David Anthony. You know, he's a privateer, you know, funding everything. You know, he was trying to sell those bikes to get back home. So to watch that just go up in flames and to sit out the rest of the weekend, you know, it sucks for him. But yeah, and then we got started for a third time.
Yeah, and it was, once again, it's almost a carbon copy. It's not just the same guys getting away, but they get away in like the same positions, the same exact way. And so it was kind of funny to watch. But this time, a couple laps later, things are a little bit different as Tony came down Charlotte's Web, which was, you know, I guess that name has a, that corner has the perfect name because it does collect a few bikes. Tony goes in too deep on the brakes, stands it up, tries to get the bike to stop, but unfortunately gets a little heavy on the brakes and low sides the bike into the gravel trap.
Yeah, and that's really the first, you know, mistake that Tony has made all year. You know, he was taken out by Josh Heron earlier in the year, which I believe is his only other DNF. Yeah, so to see that, you know, he was pushing. He didn't have to worry about the championship. He just wanted to go race. But, you know, to to both Josh Heron and Roger Hayden's credit, they were making him work for it.
Oh, for sure. And man, speaking of working for it, Heron was coming around, I think it was about the penultimate corner, that right-hander there. Oh, no. It's the one where they do that stupid, like, S-turn where they hop the curve.
Yeah, it was that last sector. Heron just, the lines he was running and the corner speed that he was able to get on that Yamaha, you just saw him eat up the time, especially when he was chasing down Tony and then when he started to chase down Raj.
Oh, yeah, but I'm talking about when he went over the bump, coming down the little S-curve they have there, he leans over the next corner and literally puts the, like, he lost the front end twice, puts it on his knee, but hits the gas to get out, stands the bike up, so much so he rides a wheelie out of the turn and lands it down, and it keeps going without losing much speed. That's probably one of the best saves. That was a Marquez-level save right there.
Yeah, that was impressive to see. I think that was on the last lap.
I think
so. He was hunting down Hayden, so it was unfortunate because I wanted to see that last lap battle, but... yeah, that was definitely Marquez-esque to see him, you know, save that, just give it throttle and hope to get out of it.
Right. So we had Roger Hayden taking the win in front of Josh Heron, and then we had Matthew Schultz on the Superstock 1000 bike bringing up the rear in third, and then we had Jake Gagne in fourth with Danny Eslick just behind him in fifth, followed by Hayden Gillen, Jake Lewis, Jason DeSalvo, Bryce Prince, Bobby Fallon, Max Swinners, and Martin Bernacki. So pretty much, you know, where you would see most people in there, I think Danny Eslick, I think something with that bike is much like Gagne and Eslick, they have figured something out in the second half of this year with those motorcycles. And if they continue on with the same team next year, which I hope they do, I think those guys are going to be a lot closer to the front where they should be. And we'll get to Matthew Schultz in just a second.
Yeah, and to kind of go off that, I think in Gagne's case, you know, being the only rider on the Honda, there's a lot of development work going on with that team, and, you know, definitely, as we've seen at the world level, it's a lot to go through, and, you know, with Danny Eslick, to see him back at the front, you know, he's a name that's been on a lot of people's radar for quite a number of years. To see him fight for wins in that Stock 1000 class, definitely been pretty nice.
Exactly. So, moving into Sunday's races, we're headed to the Super Sport race. And it's a dry race, and Garrett, you know, he's wrapped up the championship, you know, finishing third, got on the podium. So, you know, he's gonna want to get the win to close out a season properly. So we have the start. It's a pretty typical Moto America Super Sport start for 2017. It's Beach, Gerloff, and DeBees get away. But this time, DeBees is staying with them for, maybe four laps, and then the two Yamahas pull away. Then they get into a battle. And it's actually a nice battle for about four or five laps where they kind of felt each other out, got a nice pass. But then we ended up getting into the back markers.
Yeah, you know, my note here I'm seeing here is, can JD stick with him? And we did. We saw JD, you know, stick on the back of Gerloff. But once they hit those back markers, you know, I think with Garrett getting to the traffic first, it actually played into his hands, and JD got held up not once but a couple times, and that really opened up the gap.
Yeah, and it was unfortunate because I think we got kind of maybe Garrett would have pulled on the end, but I think we got robbed of a really good race for the last. So I think, you know, being the last race of the season, JD really wanted to get that last win too. And I think we got robbed a little bit just because they got through the field so quick. Because Barber's not a very big track. I mean, they, you know, I don't even think the Superbikes use their top gear on that track. So, but it was like someone was saying, all you need is gears 1 through 3 on that track for the Superbikes. But anyway, you know, they get through. Garrett obviously gets through the traffic much better than JD. There was some laps where he was getting through traffic so much better that he was getting 3 seconds plus a lap getting through there. So Garrett does end up going ahead and taking the win in front of JD. And then I think Valentin did bring it home for third. But, you know, Super Sport this year, it leaves you, you know, you've seen the rule change coming in, right, for next year. You really do have to hope that it's going to condense the field at the top. I don't necessarily want the Yamahas to get slower. I just want a chance for everybody else to maybe get caught up and get some more talent to the front. Because if they don't get other bikes to mix it up there soon, that class is going to die a slow death.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that not only at Moto America, but you know, from the manufacturer's point of view, there's only Yamaha putting, you know, new models of 600s out. So, you know, here in the States, you know, that Yamaha team is really the only factory superstar or super sport team that we have in Moto America. So obviously to see those two riders up front is no surprise, but, you know, hopefully with those rule changes, with, you know, basically the, you know, less modifications and less money you can spend on the bike, it's going to come down to talent. So, you know, hopefully, yeah, we see next year the field a little bit closer together.
So to kind of wrap up this year's championship, we have Garrett Gerloff finishing first overall, followed by JD Beach, Valentin Debies in third, Benny Solis Jr. in fourth, Jason Aguilar in fifth, followed by Nick McFadden. And those two names, Aguilar and McFadden, both 600 super stock guys. They're very young dudes, so I wouldn't be surprised to see them in the next year or two really start to come toward the front of that class. Then we have Michael Gilbert in seventh, Connor Blevins in eighth. He's another kid that's been getting stronger and stronger all year. Braden Ott in ninth. Daytona Anderson, who's, you know, been riding super 600s for a little while now, bringing up in 10th. So another competitor that would be strong in the series. But yeah, you know, this year, you know, I think it was good for super sport. We had a lot of guys that were probably showing up for, you know, a round or two. I think by the end of the year, we had 75 people who had participated in the championship. So, you know, it's a lot of riders and not everyone can make a race, but I think, like, you know, with them combining the classes and getting the rules in place and maybe tighten the championship up a little bit just because the bikes can be more competitive with those really strong bikes up front, we're going to see a much better class next year. Plus, I think JD and Garrett will be gone.
Yeah, that'll definitely help open the door for some new people. And, you know, kind of on that, it's you know, where are those guys going? And I guess we'll get to that a little bit later after the Superbike stuff.
Yeah, so, you know, we'll go, you know, into the Superbike race. You watch the start, and most things are normal, but what you really noticed in the start was Schultz had a really bad start. He really off the line. You know, he dropped back, four or five positions, so he had a really good qualifying. But then three laps into the race, you're starting to get some raindrops. The rain flags are coming down. Then the riders are starting to raise their hand. You can see they're like, no, we don't want to do this. And, you know, it's not like some of the World Series where they have bike swaps. There's a one-bike rule in Moto America. So they've got a red flag, which they did. And so everyone got in without crashing and safely. And so we had the red flag for the rain and rape. But then we had to get around to the restart. And not everybody felt comfortable getting onto the wet track.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is, to interrupt you there, Skylar, on the TV broadcast, the BN Sport broadcast, they actually didn't show... You know, there was actually another restart before the restart they broadcasted.
Really?
And yeah, it was supposed to be an 18 lap dry race. They got to the grid and then again, it was still raining and the riders put their hand up again. Roger Hayden, you know, kind of led the charge being like, no, we're not going out in this. So they delayed the start. They went on, waited a little while. Then it started bucketing down. And while it was still bucketing down, because there hadn't been a wet session all weekend, they gave the guys a 10-minute sighting lap session, which is something we don't see very often. So it gave them time to go around the track a few times. And on that restart, you know, everyone was pretty slow off the line, really in slow, tricky conditions. But, you know, only a couple laps into the race, they ended up having to red flag it when Matthew Schultz, he actually hydroplaned on the front straight and destroyed that bike. So what happens, you know, in the second restart is mighty impressive, not only for his team, but the whole result. So, yeah, getting back to the final restart when we had the 12 laps, and as you were saying, Skylar, both Josh Herron and Roger Hayden didn't think the track was safe enough. There was still a lot of standing water, especially on the front straight where Schultz went down. So, you know, we did see the restart without those two guys.
Nice. I had no idea about that stuff, so I'm glad you were able to catch that in because I just thought they had come, you know, cut back to it and they dumped a bunch and they just didn't feel safe. But awesome.
Yeah, for sure. I was actually stuck watching I was trying to watch it live because they rebroadcast the race. They didn't show it live that day. And I was watching it on like BN Connect 6 or whatever. And I was there for like maybe an hour or so just, you know, watching that whole thing go. So the fact that they didn't even cover that on the highlights was a little confusing. And I thought there was a lot of drama to be shown that was kind of missed. So just wanted to let MotoPod Land know about that little insight. But Yeah. So anyway, so we got back to the 12 lap restart for the final superbike race of the season.
Yeah. And we had, you know, Hayes now is coming to the front. He gets up there and he's kind of the, you know, the wily veteran. He knows how to ride in the rain. He gets out there and starts setting pace, and he actually gets a pretty big gap. But then Schultz gets up there and he's basically using Josh kind of like as the feeler. He can get up, you say, how fast is he going? Oh, I can go at least that fast. And he starts running down the time. And then Gagne starts coming in. He's reeling down the time. And then he's bringing, you know, Gagne's passing Elias. Then he starts bringing Elias with him. Oh, okay, now we're going. And then we're getting up there. Schultz starts running down. He gets on the back of Hayes. Hayes gets a little loose. Schultz gets on by him. And then Gagne gets up there. He gets by Hayes, and so does Elias. And now we're like, okay, Schultz, he's on a super stock machine. Like, and when it comes to rain, it's the ultimate equalizer. It has nothing to do with power of the rain, just how you get it to the ground. And Schultz was amazing. He ends up almost crashing on the last lap, which unfortunately Jake Gagne did. He ended up getting himself a little loose into a corner and sent himself a little high side, which I'm sure he was very disappointed with. He was on his way for his first podium, maybe even a chance at the win there, as he was riding with Schultz when he did that. But Schultz, after a few almost high sides in the last couple corners, brings it home for the W, gets his first win of the season, in the Superbike class, or I should say overall, because he's been winning in Super Stock all year. He's a Super Stock champion. He ends up being the first Super Stock bike to ever win the Superbike race. So congrats to him and that Westby team. They've been, you know, putting in the work this year. It's been amazing to watch what they've been able to do. And they did it in the backyard of their major sponsor, with Yamalube just being made down the road, I think, over in Georgia. But, it was a great inning to the race, a great inning to the season. And just, just kind of show it, like, you know, sure, it was rain for the last race, but a good story at the end nonetheless.
Yeah, definitely. It was nice to see Schultz up on the top step of the podium. Like I said, again, after seeing him go down, to then see him win that race and for his team to, you know, fix that bike for him to get the W was really impressive. You know, I think if anything, he had almost an advantage being on the stock bike in those tricky conditions. You know, not worried about the power, you know, just worried about riding and you know, chasing down those super bike guys. So yeah, definitely nice to see.
Yeah, definitely kudos to that team to get that bike back together, because like you said, they may have had an hour, but it sounds like that bike was secondhand by the time they got it back.
Oh yeah. If you can find a replay of the crash somewhere, he's just full tuck on the front straight on Barber, and you just see that bike come slip out from nowhere. So, that whole front fairing was mangled. I'm sure some clip-ons, some foot pegs all had to get replaced in that little time that they had. So, yeah.
Crazy. So that brings us to the finish of our championship. Tony Elias, of course, like we said, was the winner for the season, finishing first in the championship, followed by Roger Hayden. And third was Cameron Bobier, who slipped back in the championship because he missed the last two rounds, but still finished right there in front of his teammate with Josh Hayes. Matthew Schultz finished up in fifth, very strong year in front of Jake Lewis, who's had another great comeback year. Bobby Fong, strong year on the Kawasaki. Josh Herron, you know, I think Herron was having a pretty good season, and I think his team kind of screwed him up. You know, I think, you know, yeah, he had some penalties, and Josh is known for riding sometimes a little dangerously, but I think when the mean team pulled out, I think that was kind of a BS move on their part to really take away, especially because it wasn't just Josh. It was, you know, Caroline Olsen was also part of the team, and so was Bryce Prince, so they just, you know, lost everybody. But anyway, Danny Eslick in ninth, and Kyle Wyman rounding out the top 10 there. So, you know, a lot of good players this year in Superbike. I think, it's definitely getting stronger, and I think with the class restructure, much like the 600 class, it'll be a lot better for the series when they bring the rules into a more even balance next year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good. We're going to see Matthew Schultz on a Superbike. I believe there's a couple other of the privateer teams that are also, you know, moving straight up to Superbike. I believe Bobby Fong is going to be on there. I'm thinking to see him on the Kawasaki. Again, it'd be nice to see some factories in Kawasaki America, and maybe even Ducati North America with their new V4, you know, on the grid, giving some factory support and some factory dollars to these guys racing in Moto America.
Right, just slide down some parts in the KRT team in World Superbike. I mean, Bobby would probably be happy with that. I mean, what was it? I think Scott was talking about how this year, after the third round, Bobby ended up getting like some new parts, ended up taking like 15 or 16 pounds off that motorcycle. That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just to find that weight to shave off a bike like that. Yeah. You know, I mean, with the rules so in line now with World Superbike, you know, we'll see if any of those teams look to Moto America to see if they can do some development, or even see if they can get riders to go from one class to the other. We'll see.
Yeah, because I think the rules are changing in World Superbike too, and they're trying to go to maybe a single control ECU, and they don't even have that here in Moto America, so that may trickle down to, you know, just being in a single control ECU here. Electronics is definitely where it's at for evening the playing field for a lot of it. I mean, that's a very expensive and very hard thing, because usually it's not the electronics that are so expensive. It's getting the person that can program them getting right. That's usually who the expensive person is. That's a very smart engineer that usually gets that right.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you have all that data, it's great. But if you don't have the right people to analyze and go over it and to, you know, do something with the data, it's worthless.
Right. So with that, we're going to go ahead and close out the show, at least for our part. I know that Harry and Andrew, they may end up doing the MC and Fantasy League at this point, or they may have already read it. I'm not sure. But we have some upcoming races. BSB is going to be on October 1st, September 29th through October 1st. They're going to be in Assen, which is going to be a great race because I love that track. It always provides fantastic racing no matter who is there. And then World Superbike on the same weekend is going to be in Magny-Cours, France. And that's going to be getting close to the end of their season. So, Moto America's done. BSB and all the other guys are getting really close. And then MotoGP is getting close. So, we are getting down to the last few races of the season.
It's a sad time of the year, but it's got to come sometime. But, yeah, a lot of good races still to come. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, so... So in closing, like I said, you can always reach us at motopod@motopodcast.com. You can write us in with your emails, tell us what you like, what you don't like, where you want to see the show go. We're trying to be more regular. Like I said, we're getting more hosts. Things are changing, as you can see, as it goes from week to week. You're hearing new voices who are going to bring new things to the show, new ideas. So we're going to continue to get better and strong. You can find me always on Twitter and Instagram at SkylarV28. Harry Lloyd will be at HL Comms and HL Photo GP. We have Andrew Kors on Twitter at Andy Kors. We have Jim McDowell. He's on Twitter at MotoRGV. Where can people find you, Derek?
Not really on Twitter too much, but if you guys want to follow me on Instagram, you can find me at Derek_M_Cabrera. And see some pictures of bikes.
Alrighty, so without that, there is one other thing I did want to mention. As you can tell, we've got a lot of new hosts, and everybody's been fantastic, and I hope you're all enjoying them. But I do need one more person who can focus on BSB and Real Roads. I did have a few guys write in, but they kind of got lost into the wash. So if you are definitely a BSB person, if you are a Real Roads person, and you have some ambition and you want to get on here and waste several hours of your week talking motorcycles with a bunch of other idiots who love talking about motorcycles, go ahead, shoot me an email. I'll get back to you right when you email in, because I really need someone that can cover those, because we need someone that can cover BSB. I would prefer that it be somebody who is boots on the ground in Great Britain, in Ireland, somewhere around there that can get to a few of the races as well. We really would appreciate that, so go ahead and write us in. But without further ado, I think that's it for me.
Yeah, that's it for me. Thanks for having me, and hope to see you guys going forward.
Fantastic. Thanks for joining us, Derek. All right, everyone. We'll see you next week.
And now, some interviews before Andrew Kors takes us through the superbikes. This was in no way recorded in Barcelona Airport. And, yeah, you definitely can't hear the boarding gates being updated behind me.
Okay, Sunday, race day 2 here at Barber Motorsport for Moto America. Here in the Monster Energy Yamaha factory racing tent, and... joined by two-time champ Cam Beaubier. Of course, as most of you are aware, Cam's not racing this weekend after an unfortunate situation at a fairground, but he's here supporting the team. And Cam, how's it going, buddy?
It's going good. You know, I'm happy to be at the racetrack supporting Yamaha. Yeah, you know, it's a bummer I'm not on track, but at least I'm here, you know, supporting, and it's good to just get out of the house, be at the track, and had surgery last week, so just healing up, and got a few weeks to heal up and then start physical therapy.
Well, let's go ahead and get the bad out of the way first. I know, you know, with your shoulder injury, it was kind of a freak thing, you know, where you had a near high side. You didn't actually crash, but obviously did some damage. And I guess it was a lingering injury that you maybe had that it aggravated it. Is that right? Or was this just a new deal?
Yeah. You know, over the last 10 years or something like that, it's been kind of an issue. But it hasn't come out in like a few years. And I've always just, you know, held it tight if I crash or something like that. It was always in the back of my head. And, yeah, it was just funky. It was like the perfect scenario for it to come out. You know, it jolted me when I was trying to get my weight transferred to the left. And it just pulled it right out of socket. So I figured if it's coming out racing, I need to go get it fixed. You know what I mean? And had a good talk with Keith and just everyone, you know, everyone in our group. Everyone suggested that I should just get it taken care of, you know, my parents and my manager, Keith, and the team. So I think we made a good decision. Yeah, I might have been able to try to tape it up and get through the last two rounds, but I was out of the points anyways, and it's better to be safe than go out and say I crash or something bad happens because of it. I'd feel pretty dumb.
Well, I think, you know, it sounds like definitely in this case, discretion is the better, you know, part of valor. Is, you know, who's to say you could have gone out there in the next weekend or this weekend and had another issue and caused even more damage. So, you know, probably a wise move. And what's the recovery time? When you think you might be able to get back on the bike? Or obviously it'll be, you know, preparations for next season, but what's the schedule there?
I got a little time. I got 3 weeks left in the sling, and then I start physical therapy, and that'll probably be a month or so. And then I got, and then, you know, after that, we'll see how I feel and hopefully start riding. So, I'm just looking forward to getting back on a bike, man. I've been, you know, it sucks just sitting around and trying to figure out. I can't do anything, you know. I can't do anything that I like to do, ride bicycles, ride motorcycles. I can play video games. But I picked up golfing lately. I like golfing. I can't even do that. So, no, it'll get better. I'm looking forward to it. And like I said, it's cool just being able to be at the track and see my friends and see my team and go support them. So it's all good.
Absolutely. Well, you know, let's just look at your season up to the point where the injury did occur. It had kind of been an up and down season. You know, had a few wins, but you know, I know you would have liked it to have gone a little bit better up to that point. What's some of your reflections you've got on just the season up to the time you had the injury?
Yeah, I mean, it was really an up and down season. You know, we started out the season pretty rough. Only got we only had two wins at coming out of the first four rounds or something like that. And you know, that hasn't been the case the last few years. And you know, a lot of crashes on the front end, struggling. And we made a good change to the front end, some other things at the second day at Laguna, and it was kind of like a light switch, like not necessarily a light switch, but I started getting a lot more comfortable on the front end, a lot more feel, and you know, we kind of crawled our way back out of, you know, out of our hole, and that's pretty hard to do, you know, and so I was really, really happy about that and proud of, you know, kind of proud of what we did. We went on a three race win streak before, you know, I won the last three races I finished. You know, we had some good momentum, got some confidence back, and kind of got back to where I feel like we, you know, my team belongs. So, you know, it just wasn't in the cards this year. And, you know, it was nice to, like I said, it felt really good to just kind of crawl out of that hole we were in. And hopefully we take that momentum into next year and try to get that number one plate back.
Yeah, definitely, you know, that race win at Pittsburgh, you know, that killer move on Elias and took that race win. So, yeah, you know, at least the last races that you did, like you say, actually finish, you know, won and were, you know, obviously headed in the right direction. So, well, enough on this year. Going into next year, I know it's a little bit too early to be talking about, you know, definite plans. But, you know, the recent announcements by Moto America of the new class structures and the purses, it sounds encouraging for the whole series, especially the Superbike class. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think Moto America is doing an incredible job. You know, they're always trying to push it forward. And it's just so cool to be a part of, you know, part of a racing series that wants it to succeed so bad, you know, as bad as the racers do. So, you know, it's really cool. Wayne and his group and Chuck are doing an awesome job. And I think that introducing that new 300 series is going to, you know, it's going to be really, really good. We're not going to see it, you know, and then in a year or two. It's going to be 5-10 years down the road. But it's just going to bring that next wave of talent up, you know, and that's what we need right now. You see the 600. You see the 600 class kind of struggling right now, and I think it's because we haven't had that feeder class in the last few years, or the past 6 years or something like that. We have the KTM Cup, which is really has really helped, but I think it's going to be a lot more affordable and just easier for kids to come out here and race a 300 Cup and stuff like that. Especially opening it to manufacturers, you know. I know I'm sure Yamaha is going to do something, and it's going to give kids the opportunity to go find some help, you know, go get some help from some local dealerships, wherever they're from, and stuff like that. And I think it's a really, really good thing. So, I'm interested to see what the Twins class brings to, and like you said, the purse for Moto for the Superbike class, I'm sure they're going to pretty far down. I think that's a really big incentive for a lot of people to go Superbike racing, which, you know, it's what we need. You see, this year there's, you know, the field is so stacked, and the Superstock rules are pretty close to our Superbike rules, and it allows, you know, it allows for great racing. You know, some of the supers, a lot of the super stock guys that run up front have some serious talent, and they're really, really fast. And us super bike guys had our hands full all year. So, and I'm sure some of those guys are moving up, and it's gonna be a fun year next year. So
yeah, it's probably not gonna make your job any easier, to say the least, but I know you're looking forward to whatever extra competition comes into play. Like I say, it'll be good for the sport, for the series. It'll be good for you guys, you know, to keep getting pushed to that next level, for sure.
Absolutely. Like I said, I think the Superbike series is going to be, or the class is going to be pretty stacked next year. It's going to be pretty similar to this year, but everyone, or some of the super stock guys, are going to be on proper, you know, super bikes and just that extra little step, and I think it's definitely probably going to help them, so it'll be good.
Yeah, exciting times, definitely. Like I say, Chuck, Axel and Wayne Rainey and all the guys are doing a heck of a job, you know, just moving this deal along, making improvements every year, and, you know, it's good times for sure. Well, Cam, I won't keep you any longer. I know we're getting up near the first race of the day and lunchtime, so it's good to see you here. I hated about the misfortune. Just glad you're on the road to recovery, and look forward to seeing you out there picking up where you left off starting in 2017.
Thank you, man. Thanks a lot.
Okay, here in the Monster Energy Graves Yamaha pits, two-time Moto America 600 Super Sport champion Garrett Gerloff nailed it down yesterday. Way to go, man.
Yeah, thank you. It didn't exactly go the way I planned it to. Ended up running off the track on the second lap, going straight through the gravel in Charlotte's Web, and had to pull a 180 after I got out of that and get back on the track. And was a little bit down, but was able to come back, and all I had to do was finish, you know, to win the championship. So I didn't want to put her on the ground, but I also didn't want to win the championship and not be on the podium. So I did everything I could to try to be up in third and or second or whatever, and was able to catch up to Benny and pass him and got on the podium, won the championship, and it was a good day.
Absolutely, man. And, yeah, you know, might as well put a little drama into it, you know.
I guess, yeah, it wasn't my intention, but it worked out. I guess I got some TV time for it, so.
Yeah, I heard a couple of different things, sweat in the eye, or JD was blocking your view with the brake markers.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the JD blocking the brake markers this time. It's a little tough to see.
All right, man. Well, obviously wrapped up a great year. You just took it to a new level this year, obviously.
Thanks. No, it was a good year for sure. I had a lot of fun with my team. We were working really well together. We have the brand new 2017 R6, which was a big help. And, you know, I just had a bunch of tools in my toolbox to use this year. And we were really able to take advantage of them around Laguna time. And ever since then, we haven't looked back and have been just trying to keep moving forward and just looking forward to, you know, finishing out this season today after the race, and then just going to have a nice little break and enjoy the off season a little bit, and then going to figure out what I'm doing for next year real soon.
Gary, we've talked before on several occasions, and I know there was a time a year or two ago where you said you were trying to get mentally things nailed down, and obviously that's happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think that just comes with growing, and I was young, I still am young, so there's a lot of things for me to continue to learn, but I feel really good right now with where I'm at in my life and with how I'm working with everybody on the team, so there's really not a whole lot that I feel like can be any better right now, but for sure there's always places to improve, so I'm going to keep looking.
Yeah, I mean, in confidence-wise, obviously, you're there.
I feel good. You know, it's easy when you have a great team behind you and have a great bike. All you have to do is get yourself together, and then the good things will happen. So there's not a whole lot to bring the confidence levels down.
I know it's a little bit early to be talking about deals for next year, but obviously, I know a lot of people are looking to anticipating what path you might take. Moto America has announced a new class structure.
Yeah.
Superbike only class. Sounds pretty exciting. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's really cool the way they've done it. I think it'll bring the racing closer in all the classes, which will be good. I want to ride a superbike next year. That's my goal, you know. So that's what I tell everybody. It's no secret. I want to be on the big bike with the R1. But things have to line up, and I definitely don't want to be kicking anybody off the team, but it'd be good to be on that bike. I want to keep moving forward, and the 600 has been really good to me for a long time, so time for me to take that next step, I believe.
Yeah, well, it looks like you're ready, obviously. Won't keep you any longer. I know you want to go out here on the RC Cup grid and give a shout out to your boy Corey Ventura, who's going for a title. So,
a little
California love there.
That's so, right. I think he's got it. So, gonna go give him a little tap on the back and then send him out.
Yeah, you know, a little good luck, pat on the back.
That's right.
Sure,
yep.
Couldn't hurt. Absolutely.
Well, definitely.
Garrett, thanks as always for your time, man. Congrats on this championship number two. And
thank you.
Looking forward to seeing what transpires for next year.
Yeah, me too. Can't wait to let everybody know. So.
All right. Good deal. Thanks, Garrett.
Appreciate it.
Scott Bolton here from Moto Podcast, Barber Motorsports Park, the Moto America season finale for the 2017 year here in the Yamalu Westby Racing Pits with the newly crowned Super Stock 1000 champion, Matthew Schultz. Matt, Matty, congrats, man.
Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it, really. You know, it was a hard year fighting for it, and to take the championship means, a lot to me and the team, you know. So it's a really positive feeling. Thank you.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to wrap it up, with one race remaining. Here we just got the first day of practice out of the way here, and you got 2 days of racing coming up. I know you're looking forward to being able to get out there and really put your head down, not have to worry about points and all that stuff.
Yeah, you know, definitely. I think that the last three or four rounds out, I was really focusing on the championship, you know, and that, even though I try not to think about it, I mean, it's really hard not to, you know what I mean? So at least we wrap things up at the Jersey round, and I can just come to Barber and just focus on putting down really quick lap times, you know, pushing a little bit more than I have been recently, and that kind of shows now. You know, I've been third in both of the sessions overall with the Superstock guys. Had a crash in the first session out, so, you know, I'm pushing hard, and it's been a positive, you know.
I know they've got some issues on the track, at least today on the first day, due to the heavy rains we had here with the, remnants of the tropical system that blew through earlier this week. Was that what caused you to have your issue out there, or something else? Don't know.
There's just a few more little bumps around the track, and then I think around the museum corner, I kind of just hit one of the bumps, and I lost the front, you know. But I had been going over that part of the track for 15 laps prior, you know what I mean? So I can't blame it on that. It was just me trying, you know, push it a little bit harder.
Oh, good. Go ahead and get that one out of the way for the rest of the weekend.
Yeah, hopefully that's the final one.
Yeah, good deal. So, like I said earlier, you got that number one plate. I know that means a lot to you. You got your family here with you this weekend. Just reflect a little bit on, because you've it's like we talked back at Road Atlanta, you know, back in April. You know, you're not a Johnny come lately. You've put in a lot of hard years, you know, here and over in Europe. Just reflect a little bit on what this means to you.
Yeah, I mean, I've been pretty much, you know, racing overseas. You know, I left my native country when I was about 14 or 15, you know, and I've just been really trying to, you know, push the motorcycle career. And, you know, and it's been a really hard, struggle for me. You know, I mean, we hit a little bit of financial difficulty in 2015. And I was going to hang up my boots back then, you know. Then I begged my dad to just give me one more year. And then 2016, I won the National Superbike Championship and then fortunately got a ride here, which actually wasn't with the Westby crew. It was with the Rabbit Transit guys. And I did pretty well for them. And then the Westby guys picked me up, end off the season with them. And then came into 2017 knowing that I was pretty quick, you know, but... You know, we kind of knew that we would be battling for the number one title, but to actually take it was something else, you know what I mean? I think the Westby guys have been struggling the last few years with the passing of Dane and then Joshua Day getting hurt and guys trying to fill in, and they just really haven't found where they should be, you know? And then I came in and it seemed that we just gelled perfectly. And, you know, this season's been like a Cinderella story for us, you know what I mean? Like... I mean, we've just gelled well. I mean, the preseason wasn't easy for us, but just every single round, we've just been chipping away, making the bike better, and, you know, fortunately ended up with the number one plate. So, I mean, it was a very emotional day for, you know, everyone. So, I mean, I'm just really happy that we've come to the final round with it already clinched, and we can just focus on having fun and, you know, riding hard instead of carrying all that pressure, you know, but... It's been a brilliant season, and we're looking forward to 2018 racing with the big boys in the Superbike class. And, you know, we'll be here for a long, long time, and hopefully we can challenge for some more titles in the future.
Yeah, well, like I say, I mean, I know you were glad to find this team. I know this team was glad to find you. Seems like a perfect fit. And, yeah, like you just mentioned, the big news, you guys are stepping up to the Superbike class next year. Ought to be exciting. Of course, Moto America's just earlier this week announced some class restructuring. It's going to be the Superbike class is going to be a standalone deal with some pretty big purse money out there. It's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely. You know, I mean, not that, you know, money is everything, but it definitely is good to have some more finances behind racing, you know. And, you know, we're just really looking forward to just testing all the Superbike parts during the off-season now, and we've got maybe 12 or 13 testing dates set up prior to, you know, Christmas. So we're taking things very, very seriously. We know that it's our first year out, so we're not really expecting ourselves to be running first every single session. That's just crazy, you know what I mean? Yosha and Graves have been at the top for so, so long. So we're just going to slowly work like we have been this year now, and that's all we can do really, you know. But I know I've got one of the best teams backing me, and I'm really confident that my motorcycle racing has hit a all-time high, you know. So things are looking great, and I know that the future holds really positive things for us.
Yeah, and, you know, like I say, we've seen a couple of teams step up this year to the Superbike class, and obviously it's not a... you know, it's not an easy ask first year, getting used to the, you know, advanced electronics and all that. But you got a good group behind you here. I can see you guys, you know, it's going to be work, but I can see you guys getting a handle on it sooner than later. And it's going to be good to see you up there, you know, battling up for the top five and, you know, maybe even farther up as the season progresses.
Yeah, you know, definitely. I think that everyone thinks that if you just get these superbike components, it will just make you faster. But that's not how it works, really. You know what I mean? You have to actually make the parts work for you. And that's why we're putting down so many testing dates, so we can try to maximize every single part that we gain moving up to the superbike guys.
Yeah, well, like you say, it's if it was that easy, everybody'd be in that class, and obviously that's not the case. But Matty, I tell you, just like I say, congrats on that championship this year. As far as I know, the first South African to take the Moto America title, maybe an AMA, you know, Superbike, Super Sport title, class title. Yeah, as far as I know, I mean, there could have been one. Somebody in the past, but I'm not familiar with them if they are. So that's pretty cool. I know, you know, that was one of Wayne Rainey's visions, was to, you know, draw some international talent over here. And, you know, you've definitely, you know, come through and kind of made that a realization.
Yeah, you know, obviously I'm one of the foreign guys here, so there's a lot of pressure for me to do well, but I've taken it with open hands. And, you know, luckily the paddock has been very welcoming to me. You know, everyone's very friendly and stuff like that. So, you know, I might be a foreigner, but, you know, this is a second home to me, really.
Yeah, very cool. Looking forward to seeing you out there the rest of the weekend, pushing those superbike guys. You know, you used P3 today in the second practice, and, you know, you're on it. And we're just looking forward to seeing you out there enjoying yourself this weekend. And best of luck for this weekend, and look forward to seeing you move up to that superbike next year. We'll be pulling for you, and glad to have you over here.
Perfect, guys. I mean, I'll definitely be pushing hard, but we'll see how things go. And thank you so much, guys.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Cheers.
Okay, Scott Bolton here, Barber Motorsports Park, the Honda Championship of Alabama, and glad to be joined again by a man that certainly needs no introduction, president of Moto America, former three-time world champion, Wayne Rainey. Wayne, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Wayne, we're here on the last weekend, race weekend of the 2017 Moto America season, wrapping up year number three. You know, just as you look back, you know, what all has been accomplished in these last 3 years, what are some things that come to mind right off?
Well, just getting the series up and running from when we were able to acquire it. And then we had to put a rule book and actually put a whole racing series together. And this is not, you know, the last time I had anything to do with a motorcycle race, I was in it. So to be one now on the other side where you're actually presenting the race for the racers was a complete new experience. But, you know, I have good partners, Chuck Axelin, Richard Barner, Terry Cargas. We all just went all in, and so we was able to pull the series together. The first year we had, there was so many things that you needed. You know, you needed racetracks, you needed classes, and you needed TV, you needed a way to market yourself, and you needed partners to help you with that. So there was a whole lot going on. So just to get through the first year in the short amount of time we did, and then basically, I think the first couple races, we went through a year's worth of rain tires because of all the rain races we had. So we had a lot of challenges, but, you know, motorcycle racing and the racers and the teams, they were patient with us. And, you know, we got through that first year, but, you know, we had live stream that year with Fans Choice. And, you know, now we're up to live TV in the third year with BNTV. So, it's when I look back over those 3 years, it's been a blur.
Well, yeah, and you know, you looking at it one way, it don't seem like that long, but on the other hand, it seems like a pretty long road. And you know, for what you guys have accomplished, it's been very impressive. As you say, the live TV just in the third year, that's not an easy package to put together.
No, that's right. It's. The live TV was something that we worked on from year one, even though we, you know, we did, you know, we had fans, or actually the first year we had fans choice for the live stream, and then we had CBS channel for the, it was a 1 week delayed program. So that we putting all that together was incredible, because it was two different pieces of it. But what the teams all wanted was they didn't want a delay program. That's what we had. So we had to bring live TV to really help the teams get sponsorship and to help show everybody that we were a national championship, and that if you don't have live TV, you're not going to be taken serious. So that was a huge investment we had to step up into that was really beyond what our budget was set at, but we had to do it. And I'm so glad we did it, because I mean, we see what BN does now. That they show all the races with no commercials. We have slow-mo, we have instant replay, you know, they have special features on the riders. We have a pre-race show. It's on the same channel as World Superbike and MotoGP, so we can see exactly where we're at with the numbers of viewers. And so every year, it's been a good step for Moto America, and we have another year in our agreement. So we expected another big jump again next year.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, the news came out just in the last week or two that there is going to be a Superbike-only class next year, and that's exciting. You know, the current teams we have got some teams moving up. And then, of course, Superstock 1000, I believe, and then a dedicated 600 class. And then a men's class. That's going to be interesting with your 600 CC Twins, and of course, then the and the Junior Cup, yes, being replacing the current KTM Cup, it's going to open that up to some different brands. So really, really exciting news on all four fronts there.
Yeah, we're really excited. You know, the KTM RC 390 Cup is a great platform to start off our championship with. It did everything that it was designed to do. It took young families and racers and put them on the national stage, and they were able to compete with a bike that was a spec bike. And KTM was here to support it at the track, and they did a wonderful job for us. And you know, the first year we had a lot of entries, but then every year the next 2 years it just seemed to fade. You know, I think some of the riders they actually did really good in the class, so they moved up. And but we weren't getting the younger riders to come up into the class, and so, you know, after 3 years, the entries dropped off. So other manufacturers started introducing other bikes that for the same class, and we just think that was probably after 3 years, it was probably time to open it up to other brands so we could build the entries back up, and so that's what we did.
Yeah, and we see what the 300 class over in World Superbike is doing. It's like a healthy, exciting class. Looking forward to seeing that, kind of ramp up here next year. As far as the 600 Twins class, what was the motivation behind that?
So the Twins class is we wanted to have a class that was very popular with our manufacturers as far as a popular brand that's sold. So this is one of their more popular size bikes. So the actual rule is it's up to 850 cc's. It's twin class, and but the only thing you have to leave stock is the chassis. But you can work on the suspension, you can work on the motors, and you can put on different brakes and wheels if you'd like. So it's kind of a class that we thought we could bring back and let some of these teams be able to work on their bikes again. And because everything is so rigid in all the other classes, because the bikes are so much performance already, but this would be a class because of its its capacity and the weight, and being a twin cylinder, we thought would be fun so a lot of these cottage teams out there would have a class to compete in on the national championship stage.
Yeah, I got to figure that's going to be a really popular class. Probably going to draw quite a few of your top running teams in the WIRA series that are running that type of a package. So it's going to be exciting. I look for that to be a pretty full field for sure. Wayne, I know one of your goals was not only to move American talent overseas to the top, you know, to the top echelon there, but also to bring in some international competition here. And I think on that front, it's pretty interesting. You know, we've just had Tony Elias wrap up the Superbike title this year, and Matthew Scholes from South Africa, you know, take that 1,000 Superstock title and pushing the Superbike guys this weekend for everything they got.
I mean, if you look back in the past of AMA Superbike racing, it's always been the number one national championship in the world. So, you know, and riders from all over the world, international racers, have always come through the AMA Superbike Series to compete. And this is no different. You know, what we wanted to do when we set out was to have a championship that was very competitive, that meant a lot. It had some muscle, and that it was very competitive, and that you could come here, hone your craft, and if you win this championship, you would know that you would be at the, you know, one of the very top Superbike national championship riders in the world. So that's all we were trying to do, is just make it competitive and make it mean something again to the Americans. Now, because we have some international riders with Tony and Scholes, they won those classes, you know, the Superbike and Stock 1000. Hey, it just shows you Americans got to work. We got to keep working. This is a good. We can see where that level is, and if the Americans have the opportunity to go above these guys, you got to do it on the racetrack, though.
Yeah, definitely helping to push our guys, you know, to that next level. And of course, you know, it's looking, not knowing what the World Superbike package is going to be like next year, it looks like Moto America could be the premier Superbike production class internationally, possibly, because, you know, they're talking about, you know, kind of toning down the Superbikes and World Superbike, and plus the first that you guys have announced for the Superbike class next year. It's going to be interesting to see how many more international teams and riders might want to come compete.
Yeah, well, you know, we really, you know, we believe in the series, so, you know, we threw, you know, over $800,000 worth of prize money into that class. So, you know, we know that you know, we want to help the teams. We want to help, you know, subsidize how we can. And so we know there's not a lot of championships out there throughout the world that don't do that. So, but we believe in it. We think, you know, that makes it more of a carrot for the teams to want to be in the championship, and also the riders to come over here and compete and actually make some money doing it. So somebody could be quite wealthy if they do well here in this championship.
Yeah, exciting times for Moto America, and especially moving forward into next year. We appreciate all that you and your partners have done for the series. And coming up on race one of the weekend here, and I know you're wanting to go watch it, so I'm going to let you run on. But, Wayne, thanks again for all you guys are doing for the sport here in America. Thanks for your time. And, you know, we're excited and just looking forward to, you know, things moving forward.
Yeah, thanks, Scott, and I appreciate, you know, you taking an interest in this and building this this championship up to where it was at and hopefully above. And we're going to keep it going for sure. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the support.
Great. Thanks, Wayne.
Hello, and welcome to Motorpod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 537, and this is going to be the BSB special. This is the catch-up. To bring us up to date with what's been happening in BSB, we'll be covering BSB Round 9, the triple header from Silverstone, and also the BSB from Alton that happened this weekend. Just a quick review then of round 9, the triple header. This was to decide which riders get promoted to go through to the showdown. Still sometimes a contentious issue with people, but it is what it is. So this will decide the top 6 riders who will go on to compete for the title. Going into round 9, Silverstone, we had Byrne leading the standings there, with Haslam second, Hickman in third, O'Halloran fourth, Brooks, and then Mossy. Although at this point nobody was confirmed for the showdown, I think practically Byrne and Haslam pretty much had that. The everybody's attention, I think, was on people like Dixon and Iden, who were 7th and 8th in the championship, to see if they could get up, and if they did, who would they displace? So those, I think, were the people to watch during the upcoming three races that we had. So going into the first race, the qualifying, we had Jason O'Halloran on pole, Jake Dixon in second, Allison and Brooks third and fourth, Haslam in fifth, Guintoli on the Suzuki putting in a good showing, definitely found something from a performance standpoint there, and it was great that he was able to show that. Hickman in seventh, Hopkins in eighth, Shane Byrne was in 10th, and Luke Mossy in 13th, closely followed by Iden in 14th. When we got on to the first race was interesting because it had been dry up until that point, but then there was a shower that hit, and it seemed to hit almost exactly half of the track. So when the riders did that outlap, they saw that half of the track is soaking wet, and then the other half is bone dry. So when they came up to line up on their grid, there was some of the riders were coming up asking for a delay. Definitely saw people like Shane Byrne, John Hopkins, and Haslam were up there discussing. You know, I think these are the sort of the senior riders, and I think they feel it's their responsibility to step up and talk and work with race organizers, trying to figure out what's safe. It was interesting that a lot of the other younger competitors just sort of sat there on their grid and just focused, feeling, you know, what did they need to do to win this race and try not to worry about it. But the race went ahead, and it was very easy to see very quickly which riders had made the right decision tire-wise and which ones maybe hadn't. It was interesting that after the sighting lap, Hickman dived straight into the pits to get the bike changed onto wets. He wasn't able to make it back onto the grid and therefore started from pit lane. But very, very quickly you saw as the lights went green, that we had Brooks, Dixon, Hopkins, I think, on full wets, and they immediately went into the lead. Other riders like Haslam, Ellison, Barron, and O'Halloran on the intermediates, they were just losing too much time on the heavy wet conditions, and they just couldn't seem to make that up on the dry part. So very quickly, by lap two, you had Brooks in the lead, Hopkins, Irwin, followed by Dixon and Marcy. And then by lap three, you could see that Byrne on the intermediates, some 23 seconds behind in 13th. And as the race went on, you could see the track was starting to dry and the track was starting to come to him such that he was able to start pulling it up. But ultimately, it was too little too late, and he ultimately ended up crashing out one lap from the end. Haslam was out early as well on lap four. So the podium at that point then really went to those front runners. So we had Irwin on the podium with Brooks and Hopkins, Jake Dixon, Luke Mossy in fourth and fifth, Iden as well up there in sixth. O'Halloran from pole unfortunately fell back and was in 11th, and Guintoli, and after that great qualifying, was back in 13th. Some of the folders, as I mentioned, were Shane Byrne, Haslam, and Tommy Bridewell also went down. Race two was nice in that it was at least in the dry, and at this point we now knew that Byrne had been confirmed in the showdown, even though he had crashed out in race one. Unfortunately, race two started off with a big crash early on with Taylor McKenzie crashing out that also involved Linfa, and I think Lee Jackson went down there too. It was sad to hear that Taylor McKenzie, I think, broke a foot in that crash, so unfortunately he's going to be out for a while, so we wish him all the best from all here at Motorpod. Later we also had crashes for Haslam and Irwin, and this race was notable because we actually had Guintoli briefly leading the race and racing competitively with Brooks and Byrne, with Ellison coming all the way from the back of the grid. Ellison had been put to the back of the grid, from what I remember, with technical infringement, I think, for changing gearbox ratio. So he had to start from the back, and he came forward from the back to be competitive from the front. It was great to see Guintoli and the Suzuki up there. And but we had, I think, from lap nine, there was a big crash for Andy Reid and Martin Jessamer as well. Unfortunately, Andy Reid, I think, was was hurt in that. He broke his leg. Later it was revealed, but the safety car came out so the medics could attend to number 18. And then, unfortunately, under safety car conditions in lap 11, Sean Winfield's engine blew up, leaving oil on track, so the race was red flagged. So that then they called the result. So at that point, we had Brooks, Ellison, and Byrne for the podium. Fourth was Guintoli, which is a pretty good result as well for him. O'Halloran was now up there in fifth. Bradley Ray, another Suzuki rider for Bilbao Suzuki, with a strong showing in sixth. Idden in seventh, and eighth we had Peter Hickman. Jake Dixon managed to get in there at ninth, and tenth was John Hopkins. So then we started race three, and it's difficult to describe race three. Race three was an absolute crash fest. The conditions were soaking wet, and ultimately the race was red flagged on lap 10. I think the race organizers were watching this. They wanted to just stop this as soon as they could. So once they got two-thirds distance complete and they recognized that nobody was really competing for positions, I think they red-flagged it. So just to give you a sense, we only had seven finishers. From crashing, we had Idden down, we had Bridewell, Hopkins, Byrne, Hickman, Irwin, Mossi, Harrison, Guintoli, Ellison, Brooks, Jessup, Winfield, Zanotti, O'Halloran, and Haslam as well. Haslam, I think, didn't even get to start with technical problems on the grid. Those who did make it to the finish, though, were Dan Linford with the win, Michael Laverty in second, Jake Dixon in third, Westmoreland, Schmertz, Bradley Ray, and Lee Jackson. So at the end then of that triple header, that left the BFB standings, and we now know who went through into the showdown. Shane Byrne, Liam Haslam, Josh Brooks, Jake Dixon, Peter Hickman, and Jason O'Halloran. Unfortunately, Luke Mossi just missed out. He's still recovering from that huge crash and the broken back that he suffered. Idden was there in eighth. Those probably were the only other two people who could have been spoilers. Ellison too far back, and in tenth then in the standings is Linford. So that then brings us on to the BSB race this we had just this weekend at Alton Park. There was a little bit of BSB news that was announced just before Alton Park. So Dixon confirmed that he's re-signed for 2018 for Lee Hardy Racing. I was kind of hoping that maybe he might find an opportunity in Moto2. I know he had that one Moto2 wildcard. I think he did pretty well with that. It would be great to see someone like that moving across into Moto2 and then maybe just giving some opportunities there. Maybe that was still a little bit too early, but it's exciting to see him back because he has really been quite an exceptional talent for this year. Also confirmed for 2018 were Glenn Irwin and Shane Byrne for the Paul Bird Ducati. No big surprise there. So round 10 at Alton Park for qualifying. The top three that we had was Dixon in pole, Byrne in second, and Brooks in third. So race one was a wet race, and it was some 18 laps. So Dixon had to start from the pit lane, unfortunately, which then put him 23rd. And all the riders were on the full wets due to a heavy shower just before the race started, which left the entire track pretty wet. And there was some blue sky, so it didn't look like there was going to be any more rain, but there was a lot of standing water. So as the lights went green, we saw that Shane Byrne got a pretty bad start from pole. Somehow just didn't quite hook it up right and got a big wheelie off of the line. And that meant that Dan Linford could sweep into the lead on the first lap. We saw the Laverty ran wide at the end of the first lap and took to the grass, so that put him back. So by the end of lap one, we had Linford, Brooks, Hickman, Byrne, Haslam in fifth, Idden, Hopkins, Ray, Irwin, and Bridewell in 10th. O'Halloran, the other showdown Quintana was back in 14th. And at this point, we could definitely see that Linfoot was finding some confidence and still clearly starting to gap the leaders. He was easily, say, a second quicker each lap. And the problem is, very quickly, you could see the amount of water that those full wets were moving meant that a dry line on the racing line quickly started to appear. And then with all these people following each other, you realize that you need to pass. It means you need to go offline and onto that wet. And that's just going to be really, really difficult. One thing from my standpoint was just great to watch was to see that you've got a Honda, a Yamaha, a Ducati, a BMW and a Kawasaki, all these different makes and manufacturers of bike, all up there, all being competitive, any one of them at that point potentially been able to take the win. And as a series, this is great to watch, because at the same time, you know, we're watching World Superbikes and, you know, there's a lot of criticism there with the dominance that Kawasaki and Ducati have been showing. So lap four, Hickman now takes the lead of the second pack. So you've got Dan Linfoot out in quite an impressive lead. Hickman now is at the head of the followers. So you've got Hickman, Brooks, Iden, Hopkins in fifth, Byrne in sixth, and Haslam in seventh. And it's really Hopper and Haslam that are on the move. They found the confidence now, and they're starting to move up through that leading pack. Unfortunately, lap five, Luke Mossy retires. He pulls into the pits. I think, you know, still conscious of that bad back and realizing the conditions that, you know, there's nothing for him to prove, and there's no point risking an accident there. Lap 5 too, also unfortunately, we see Guintoli go down, which was a shame. Definitely seen him demonstrate at Silverstone some good dry weather pace, but in the wet, one mistake and he's down. By the start of lap 7 then, we've got Iden has broken away from the front of that chasing pack to try and chase down Liddon. We've got Hopkins in third and Haslam in fourth. And then following them is Hickman, Brooks, Byrne, Bridewell and Ellison in ninth. And Ellison in ninth, from what I understood, was riding with a fractured wrist. So that's amazing to see him riding a full-blown superbike in ninth competitively like that. The other two showdown contenders is Dixon, who was up to 14th, and Halloran in 12th. And at this point, we can start to see now Iden's on a real charge. He's trying to chase down Linfoot, and he's found his rhythm, and he's found his confidence. So he's now starting to put in fastest laps and starting to chase down Iden after this point. Hopkins is breaking away too, bringing Haslam with him as they chase down after Iden. Lap 8, Bridewell unfortunately goes down out of 8th place, and luckily no others were caught up in that, because it was a pretty tight pack and it was a very, very quick fall. There was no warning. The bike just suddenly snapped, and it was just a reminder that the knife edge of these conditions that these riders have, you got to be so careful with those things. Okay, lap 10 now. Got just over the half race is done, and Hopkins and Haslam have caught up with Iden, who right now is about 8 seconds behind Linfoot. So Linfoot's still in a commanding lead, and you're starting to think, okay, this is over half race distance. Maybe Linfoot has got it out for the win. The other group following along behind them, some 4 seconds behind, is Brooks, Hickman, Byrne, Laverty, Ellison, and Bradley Ray on the Suzuki in 10th. Dixon, the other and O'Halloran are only up to 11th and 12th. And then suddenly Iden goes down, I think at Hizzy's. It was a real shame after all that hard work he'd put in. He was really pushing to try and catch Linfoot. So that then left Hopper in second, about 9 seconds behind Linfoot. Lap 12, you've got Dixon now, who's cutting through this this pack through who from 11th, like he's just like a hot knife through butter. He's passing up through past Byrne into 7th, and then Byrne gradually slipping another place, losing that to Ellison. So you could see, I think he came across the start-finish line, he was fiddling with his helmet, and it later turned out that he definitely had an issue with his visor misting, so he was struggling for visibility there. Laverty, meanwhile, has fought his way up to 5th and was behind Brooks. Lap 13, Haslam now has slipped past Hopkins to take 2nd place. And there's definitely a dry line, so you can start to see now that Tire management is going to be crucial. With the full wets, if they're too dry for too long, they're going to overheat and they're going to start to lose their tread. So there's this delicate balance of trying to keep those full wets on the dry for the grip, but you know, trying to hit some of the wet patches as well to keep them cool down. And you're beginning to wonder too if Lidden at the front, Linford at the front, has cooked his tire as well. So is Haslam and Hopkins going to be able to catch Linford? Lap 15, getting towards the end now, Linford is on for the win. It's clear. He just needs to see, who's going to be second and third. But unbelievably, with only a few laps remaining, Linford's engine lets go. Just devastating to see that, with all that hard work done, and now just only a few laps to go, the Honda engine blows, and luckily he's able to get it off the track pretty quick. He runs off onto the grass, and it just luckily keeps it upright, but with the oil on the track, there's a red flag. So the result is called, and it's Haslam and Hopkins first and second, Brooks in third. Dixon has pretty much caught Brooks in fourth, just missing out on the podium there, with Laverty, Allerton, Ray, Hickman, and O'Halloran. So from that, we had... Haslam and Hopkins and Brooks on the podium. Looking back, we had Bradley Ray in a strong seventh, Hickman in eighth, Byrne unfortunately in ninth with the visor problems, O'Halloran in tenth. So then moving on to race two from Alton Park. Happily now we had the blue skies, but it was still it was a dry track, but there was certainly damp places, some puddles. So although it was slicks for pretty much everybody on the grid, they were going to have to be careful. There were places where you really had to watch it. So the grid taken from the fastest laps from race one was Dixon in pole, Haslam and Hopkins on the front row, Iden, Allison and Linford, and then Brooks, Laverty and Lee Jackson. 10th was Bradley Ray, O'Halloran in 11th, and Byrne back in 12th. So, the race gets underway and everyone's away clean. Haslam, Dixon, Linford, Iden, and Ellison in sixth. By the end of lap one, we've got Dixon and Linford now pushing ahead of Haslam, who's in third. And then following is Hopkins, Iden, and Ellison. Byrne is down in 11th. Lap two, unfortunately, we see Bridewell retire into the pits. I think due to a technical issue, though I'm not sure what it was. At that point, then, we've now got a group of five with a gap back to Allison. And then bringing up behind them is Ray and Byrne, who's up to eighth. Unfortunately, lap four, Hopper goes down at Britain's, just loses the front and out of the top five. Not sure if he touched a curb or touched a white line, but you just see him like at full lean, the front just folds and he just slides straight on. So at the end of lap five, all together now, line astern, you have Dixon leading, Linford, Haslam, Iden, Bradley Ray in fifth, Ellison Byrne now up at seventh, Hickman, Brooks and O'Halloran. Guintoli's back in 14th with Bradley Ray being the man on the move, posting the fastest laps. At the start of lap 9, Haslam has been able to put a move on Linford and slot into second now behind Dixon. Ray is up to fourth and just keeping the top three in sight. There's a bit of a gap from that four, and then back we have Iden, Allison, Byrne. He seems to have burned up his tyres and doesn't seem to be making any forward progress there, having to have started 12th on the grid. Behind him is Hickman, Brooks with O'Halloran back in 10th. Now, lap 10, we can see that Haslam pushes past Dixon to take the lead. Ray is now right up with them and looking really, really strong. So we've got Haslam in the lead, Dixon close behind, Lynn and then Ray, and that's the top four. And then a few seconds behind, we have the second group, which is Iden, Byrne, Brooks, Hickman and O'Halloran. And then Linford is able to squeeze past Dixon. and into second. So now you've got Haslam and Linford pushing, but not quite leaving Dixon and Ray behind. You can see that they're sort of there in contact, and you can definitely see that Ray is carrying his momentum and he's trying to find a way past Dixon. So which he's able to do in by lap 15. So the leading four now are all together. So 15 laps, and you've got all four bikes together. You've got Haslam leading, Linford second, Ray in third, and Dixon at any one of those you feel could potentially go on to take the win. Byrne is pulling out, is pulling the next group up, but has started to slip back. So he falls to the back of the group of Brooks, Hickman, Byrne, and then O'Halloran. So the focus now is really on the leading four, with Dixon starting to fade a little. So you've got... Brooks and Hickman now have caught up with Dixon as he starts to fade back off of the leading three, such that by lap 17, you've got Brooks and Hickman who are able to slip past Dixon as his tyres are starting to go off. They're taking fourth and fifth. But the fight now is really for the podium positions, or at least the podium order. It's Haslam leading, Linford second, and Bradley Ray an incredible third place. Fantastic. So the start of the final lap now, Linford takes Haslam, but runs wide, and Haslam just gets it. He cuts it back in front. Hickman and Brooks are fighting for fourth with Dixon, who's trying to hold off Byrne. Linford is able to slip cleanly past Haslam again and then just runs the last couple of corners, you can see, just slight defensive, not allowing any space for Haslam. Haslam just seems to focus on trying to get out of the last corner really, really well to get a run to the line. And it's a run to the line which Linford just wins, Haslam fractionally behind, and Bradley Ray in third. Hickman's able to hold off Brooks, and then Dixon holds off Byrne. So this is Bradley Ray's first podium of his rookie year. A very, very impressive impressive race by him. So the final results, we had Linford, Haslam and Ray on the podium, followed by Hickman and Brooks, Dixon and Shane Byrne in 7th, O'Halloran in 8th, Christian Innan in 9th, James Allison in 10th, Guintoli in 11th, Irwin back in 12th, Michael Laverty, unfortunately, 14th, and out of the fallers, probably the main ones were Hopkins and Bridewell. So that left the standings now, with Haslam taking a 22-point lead ahead of Brooks, Byrne in third place, Dixon, and then Hickman and O'Halloran. So we still have Assen to go, which is end of September, 1st of October, the same weekend as the World Superbikes. So we'll be doing a roundup for them. This just completes the BSB news, so at least we brought that up to date now. The other thing that I wanted to do before we loop in Harry a little bit later to talk about World Superbikes and MotoGP is also just bring up to date the MCM Fantasy League. We've been pretty remiss about not covering this. And of course, given that I'm now also a host, there's sort of added motivation for me to do this. But I just wanted to go through and pull up the latest results. So looking through this, we've got all the results, I believe, but for some reason excluding Alton Park. We have the Portimao World Superbike, but Alton Park BSB, I'm not 100% sure if these results are included. But we have in the Motopod Fantasy League, we have over 112 listeners taking part. But the clear leader is Jim Mahoney with his Team Grizzly. He's up there at 2,435 points, which not only puts him top of the Motopod Fantasy League, but puts him third overall in the MCN Fantasy League standing. That is a hugely, hugely impressive effort. And annoyingly for me, I think he's pulled out too much of a gap for me to be able to close in with a few remaining rounds. So now I think my competition is trying to stay ahead of Mark Green in third with his Team Green, Alex Samara in fourth with his Alex S.A. Calafat 77 team. We've got Darth Fluffy from Vittorio Tamalio, Pandora's Box 2017, John Allen in 6th, BF8 from Ben Fetterplace in 7th, Contra Rotations in 8th from Gary Beswick, and 9th is Scolded Cats for Jer Kiani. Thank you, everybody, for taking the time to put in your team. If you have an existing team, you can still enter them in to the Motorpod Fantasy League. You can go to the fantasyracemotorcyclenews.com website. The pin for the Motorpod Fantasy League is 7247, and you can still enter your team if you're not too late. To just maybe touch on hopefully what is not too sore a point, we should just recap also the MCM host leagues. Luckily, I now get to slot in leading that. Martin is second, who's currently 21st overall with his Desert Donuts. 38th is Harry Lloyd overall. Dave Neal is 45th overall. Scott Bolton, 66. And Skylar Vicroy is 103rd. And Jim Race is 104th overall with Around the Bend, isn't it? So coming up next, with a little bit of luck, we should be talking to Harry live via satellite from his hotel penthouse suite at the Parador in Aragon. Hopefully we'll get to discuss World Superbikes in Portimao and also some preview and some MotoGP news. So with that done and the BSB hopefully caught up to date, I'll leave you and talk to Harry in a little while.
Yeah, hi, it's Harry again. No way, still sitting in Barcelona Airport. Portimao, Johnny Ray did the double. Hey guys, he's going to be champion. It was pretty sad that Sykes hurt himself. That's all I have to say. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for listening, and a big thank you also to all the other hosts for picking up the slack. It is really appreciated, and catch everybody later.